I'm Pastor Danielle. I'm one of the pastors here at Spark, and thank you, Pastor Kristen, bringing in my goodies here today for you all. We are celebrating Epiphany Sunday. So it's Matthew. Our reading today is from Matthew chapter 2, and just because you're probably wondering, this is myrrh over here. This is frankincense over here, and these are chocolate gold coins. I couldn't afford the real thing. And all of the elementary kids that are staying in here today, you can come and help me offload the Hanukkah gelt with the dreidel on one side and the Hanukkah on the other. So we have that. And I'm just going to put a little bit of myrrh on our incense burner. So I'm going to do frankincense. The myrrh is not my favorite, so we'll myrrh it over to the side, and we'll do the frankincense. So if you get frankincensed out, you can, move. I won't do a lot. Like, we don't need to set off the smoke detector this week. And we'll just put a little bit in here and kind of see. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with these scents. I'm not very good at this. Oh, here they come. If you've spent any time in an Orthodox church, or in the old city in Jerusalem, here it comes. Last night I was practicing this. This is not my normal activity. And I tried it just out of the box, like with all things I purchased, and then messed it up. So then I had to YouTube it. And so my house smelt not awesome for a little while. And it didn't smell like the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem, you know, the church where Jesus was crucified and buried and rose again. It smelled like something different. And my daughter told me to not do this tonight. So just warning you all, Phoebe's already warned me to not participate in this activity. And I was like, I'm going to try anyway. So here we go. I'm going to make it a little less smoky, I think. Okay, to the side. Have you ever seen, there we go, some incense burning. I did have to YouTube it. Okay, so here's the frankincense. And here's the myrrh. And the frankincense is sourced from Ethiopia. And the myrrh is sourced from Somalia. And for those of you who like the westernized version of an essential oil of frankincense and myrrh, I'll pass these around in just a little bit. And you can all take a little smell and then pass them by. They can spill, so don't. It's not like a roller, okay? It's not. It's like an open bottle. All right. Let's go to our reading today, Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 15. In the time of Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we have observed his star in the east and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the Magi and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. And then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." And when they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen in the east until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary and his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. And then opening their treasure gifts, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Now after they had left, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And then Joseph got up and took the child and his mother by night and went to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. And this was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." Epiphany, gifts fit for a king. So what does epiphany mean? Have you ever had an epiphany? Fantastic. Now you know what it means. Like, you've had some sort of revelation. Something has come to mind. Something's been revealed to you. And Epiphany Sunday, is the Sunday that comes often right before or right after what is Epiphany on January 6th. And it commemorates the arrival of the Magi to worship Jesus. It's always on January 6th, by the way, because as Pastor Mark told you all last Sunday, there are 12 days of Christmas. They began on December 25th, so we're still in the 12 days. They will end on January 6th. So 12 days after Christmas, Epiphany, which is also known in early church writings as the Theophany or Three Kings Day, it has been celebrated as a feast day by Christians since the 200s, 300s AD. Pretty cool, huh? I know. Did you know? I was like, woo, that's early. They're having some good times with these Magi coming to honor and worship Jesus as king. So let's start first with, like, who are the Magi? Who are the Magi? Anybody have any guesses? Guesses? Yes. Do you have a guess? Sarah, did you want to guess? Yeah, they're wise guys. Very good. They're wise men. Okay. And actually, scholars don't agree. So if somebody else had another guess, yeah, go ahead. Naomi? People. Yep, people. That's right. We also don't know how many there are. It has become tradition that there are three because three gifts. But maybe there were more than three. Maybe there were fewer than three. We don't know. Scholars are not in agreement as to how to interpret the Magi, who are described as wise guys, as wise men. They're described as magicians or astrologers. Most scholars agree they are coming from the east. They're of a priestly class. They're from the courts of kings. In the Greek translation of the book of Daniel, Daniel uses the same word for magi as describing the court, the people who are in the court of the Persian king of Nebuchadnezzar. Like, sort of, you know, whether they're astrologers or wise guys or magicians of some sort, you know, somebody who's, or of a priestly class, that's kind of where we hang out there. Where are they from? Well, the Roman Empire in the time of Jesus has been pushing and expanding far north. Look all the way to Britain. You can go to Britain and see Roman excavations of time there. You can go south towards the northern portions of Africa. They're in Egypt, and they've pushed over towards where you see Judea is in Syria and Mesopotamia. But they're trying to push towards Parthia and not quite making it. They're trying to push in towards Arabia and not quite reaching all the way there. The Roman Empire is in this expansive spot. And what we think is that really, if we look at the next slide too, that as the Roman Empire is growing, that the Parthian Empire is also growing, and there's a Nabatean kingdom also growing. And so it's likely that the Magi are from one of these two regions, from either the Nabataeans or the Parthians. And regardless of which place, neither of those places are part of the Roman Empire. And so here they come in these first century empires. Now, if they're coming from Parthia, their journey is at least 750 miles long. This is a caravan of people. They're traveling together for security. They're going to have to guard their treasures, which are the most precious and expensive gifts that can be found in the region. They're going to have to disrupt all their other plans. This isn't something you go, hey, what do you want to do this weekend? Let's go to the coast, right? This is, we have seen a star. We are convinced of this sign. And we are going to go and worship the one born king of the Jews. Now, just to give you some perspective, if you are right here in Palo Alto and you're like, we've seen a sign, we're sure God is in this, and we would like to go and make an effort. I think I heard a doorbell. I don't know if it was one of the other places, just in case somebody's there. Thank you. We're going to go and make an effort to go and worship this king. If you're leaving here, let's just pretend you think we're going to go south. You're going to be deep in Mexico. That's a good long distance. It's not just even, you know, to Disneyland. You got to keep going further. If you want to go north, you're going to be upwards northern border of Oregon into southern Washington state. So these aren't like a handful of grandpas that just decided to look around, looked at the stars one night, like, those are pretty. let's take a walk, right? These are guys that have prepared for this. Now, if they're of the Nabataean community, the Nabataeans are incredible. We can kind of look at this next slide here. That anyone ever see Indiana Jones? Yeah. So this scene of the temple treasury, the Nabataean temple treasury, is from Petra, modern day Jordan. And they had incredible architecture. And the Nabataeans, it makes its way into one of them films. I forget exactly which one. The Nabataeans had an incredible capacity to travel throughout the world. They had like hidden watering holes, the distances of a day's journey on a camel. They were able to redirect water in the desert in crazy engineering ways that people are still trying to figure out today. They're incredibly bright, beautiful, smart, ingenuity in how they live in the world. If we're thinking that it's from the Parthians, they are also mathematicians. They are looking at the skies. They are astronomers. They're figuring all these things out and traveling quite a far distance. If they are from the Babylonian region, they have their own written texts. They're looking at different ways, and they're from these other neighboring empires of the community. So how did these Gentiles know to come? They looked to the star. One more click.
I'm looking for the star right now.
This is it. They heard this song the whole way, right? Kirk Franklin.
I wonder where you are right now.
Wait a minute.
We three kings of Orient.
Okay, we don't know if there's three.
Bearing gifts, we travel so far. Field and fountain more.
You can sing along.
Guys are lost.
Wise men don't get lost, Big.
So you're saying they know what this birthday party is?
And what makes you so certain it's a birthday party?
Oh, here we go.
Let's go.
That's Oprah, by the way.
Gold I bring.
Gold I bring to crown you my heir.
You are
king forever, ceasing ever, over a song to reign.
You bring gifts to a baby shower.
Baby shower? Hallelujah. What is a baby going to do with frankincense, silly camel?
Well, we'll have to untie these knots ourselves.
Ooh, excuse me.
Oh, the other way.
I got it. Come on. A long time.
To find the lamb that will save the day.
Through the storm.
I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. Have you watched The Star, anybody here? It's so good. Yes, we love it. We watch it every year. So for all our elementary kids here, I hope you enjoyed our quick little star. So what is it that's causing them to follow? A sign in the sky. They don't have a text that they're working from. They're following a sign that is accessible for them, which is pretty amazing. That right here at the beginning of the story in the book of Matthew, we have These wise magi, these wise people, this priestly class traveling hundreds of miles with risk just because they've seen and experienced something in the skies that has pointed to them. And at least in part, what we can understand from the story is that God will use whatever God needs to or can use in order to reach us and get our attention. So even if you don't have your nose buried in your IV in-depth study Bible, God can still reach you. That's not to say that you don't give God something to work with. Please read your Bibles. But God is trying to reach us all. Now, where do they show up? They show up and they meet a guy named Herod in the days of Herod. So Herod is the king. Herod the Great is the king in Jerusalem. And when they get to Jerusalem, they see some pretty awesome stuff. Now, these are models built by archaeologists who are architects today. But Herod's got like massive building project in Jerusalem, big palatial mansions, a big court. I mean, this guy looks like the place where a king would be born. He's got a great like swimming pools, all of the things. And let's just learn a little bit about Herod, because most of us only know about Herod what we have read in this portion, which is that he killed the babies in Bethlehem. Now, Herod was crowned king of the Jews by the Roman Senate in 40 BC. Stop. Not born king of the Jews. Crowned king of the Jews. He was a king without a kingdom, though. So upon his return to Israel, he's in Rome, he gets crowned king of the Jews, king of the Judeans, and upon his return to Israel, oh, by the way, is he Jewish? No, he's an Idumean. Maybe half Jewish, but he's an Idumean. His father and his grandfather have been part of the Roman culture for a long time. They're politically savvy. Herod is not, what's the Messiah supposed to be? The king is supposed to be of the line of David. Herod's not of that line. Upon his return to Israel, he's given a Roman army, and he has to capture Jerusalem. His first order of business, kill everybody. So he's going to kill his Hasmonean predecessors. These are the people who had come through the Maccabean line, the Hanukkah events we just celebrated. And Mattathias Antigonus was executed with the help of Mark Antony. Yes, that Mark Antony, the Cleopatra and Mark Antony, that one. Herod killed 45 leading men of Antigonus's party in 37 BC, along with John Hyrcanus II, over an alleged plot to overthrow Herod in 30 BC. Go ahead. He continued to purge the Hasmonean family. He then killed his brother-in-law, Aristobulus, who was at the time an 18-year-old high priest, also not of the line of Aaron. He was drowned in 35 BC by Herod's men in the swimming pool of the winter palace. Like, hey, come on here, Aristobulus, come have a little swim with me. No problem. We're just going to kill you while you're swimming. And so they do that in Herod's winter palace in Jericho because Herod thought that the Romans were going to favor Aristobulus as ruler of Judea instead of him. He had a Hasmonean mother-in-law, Alexandra, who's the mother of his beloved wife, Miriam, and he killed her in 28 BC. Because that's what you do when you want to have a good, solid relationship with your mother-in-law. And he killed his second wife, Miriam, in 29 BC because he loved her to death. And so then he had three of his sons killed. Go back one slide really quick if you can. He had three of his sons killed. You were right. Kristen's helping me out. Go back one, sorry. Around 20 BC, Herod forgave one-third of the people's taxes. Because now he's like, oh, I guess these people don't like me, right? I have a bad reputation for killing all the people around me. So I'll forgive a third of their taxes in order to curry favor for them. But while I do that, I'm going to set up an internal spy network to eliminate any people who are, I suspect, of revolt. Yeah? Good. He had three of his sons killed. The first two, Alexander and Aristobulus, the sons of Miriam, were strangled in Samaria in 7 BC, buried at the Alexandrium. The last son, Antipater, was killed 5 days before Herod died. And as well, at that time, he killed two leading rabbis and their disciples, their students. He was extremely paranoid. I think when you kill all your friends and family, right, this is an understatement. And got worse, can you imagine, the last 4 years of his life. In 7 BC, he had 300 military leaders executed. He also had a number of Pharisees executed in the same year after it was revealed that they had predicted to his youngest brother's wife, quote, God's decree that will give, like Herod's throne will be given, taken from him, both from himself and all his descendants. Royal power will fall to her and Phasaurus and any children that they might have. So he's like, I don't like that prediction. Let me kill you. So now take Matthew's words in chapter 2. in the time of Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, magi, priestly class, wise guy, magicians show up in Jerusalem and they say, "Where is the child who's been born king of the Jews? We've observed his star in the east and want to pay homage to him." So how, do you remember what it says? It says, when Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. They're like, let's not set this guy off, right? This guy is likely to go on a murderous rampage. And it doesn't matter who you are. You could be his son. In fact, an early Roman writer said it would have better have been a pig in Herod's household than one of his sons, because Herod pretended to be a Jew, so he kept kosher. He wasn't going to kill a pig, but he'd kill his sons in 2 seconds. Crazy dude. And this is the one that then has said, oh, you know, this was great. Come here, Magi. Why don't you go and worship him? The religious leaders come and say he's going to be born. The Messiah, the king of the Jews, will be born in David, in the city of David in Bethlehem. And he's like, all right, you go worship him and let me know so I can come and worship him too. I mean, I don't think they had to be wise guys to realize that Herod's offer was not genuine. Now, not long after the birth of Jesus, Herod will die. And just in case you were wondering whether or not there's justice in the world, let's just read Josephus's description of Herod's physicality in his last days. Josephus writes this. He's a first century Roman historian. "Now Herod's distemper greatly increased upon him after a severe manner, and this by God's judgment upon him for his sins. For a fire glowed in him slowly, which did not so much appear to the touch outwardly as it augmented his pains inwardly. For it brought upon him a vehement appetite to eating, which he could not avoid to supply one sort of food or another. His entrails were ulcerated, and the chief violence of his pain lay on his colon. An aqueous and transparent liquor settled about his feet." So some good cankles. "Like a matter afflicted him at the bottom of his belly. Nay, farther, his privy member was putrefied and produced worms. And when he sat upright, he had a difficulty of breathing, which was very loathsome on account of the stench of his breath." So nobody wanted to get near him because he smelled so bad. "And the quickness of its returns. He also had convulsions in all the parts of his body, which increased his strength to an insufferable degree, and is said by those who pretended to divine and who were endowed with wisdom to foretell such things that God had inflicted this punishment on the king on account of his great impiety. He was known of his day not as Herod the Great, but Herod the Wicked. And when he died, there was great celebration." Now, he knew that this was going to be the case, by the way. So before he died, he actually gathered up a bunch of beloved religious leaders, put them in the stadium and said, okay, when I die, kill all those guys so that there will be weeping in Judea, because no one's going to mourn the wicked. I've heard that recently, right? So he did that command, but as soon as he died, they were like, let's not do that. Let's let those people go. He had an incredibly beautiful mausoleum made for himself at the Herodian, just a few miles away from Bethlehem. He was buried there, and when archaeologists came and discovered it, it had been vandalized terribly in ancient times. People literally went and danced on his grave. Herod the Wicked is the one that is in our story. Now, we don't have any extra biblical accounts of Herod killing all the babies in Bethlehem. But does it sound out of character for him? No. Sounds exactly like what he would do. Now, Bethlehem is a small, modest, beautiful little village just about 6 miles south of Jerusalem. It's not 750 miles away, so these wise guys who finally show up, whatever their journey was, they don't have much further to go. It's less than a day's walk. It's a nice walk just in the morning. And just go, you just hang out on Hebron Road and just go from Jerusalem down to Bethlehem and find that beautiful little village. Now, when they get there, this is the shadow of the Herodian. This is where Herod was buried. And this is a palace that he built there. And when you get in, you can go and see. Some of you have been with us. The palace is incredibly ornate. It's beautiful. It's definitely fit for a king. It had gardens and beautiful. You can see the next slide here. I mean, it's really stunning and gorgeous. And Herod had this built where there had not been a hill, and he built it there to make a hill for himself. And this is where instead we have Jesus, born King of the Jews, in a modest home where the animals were, with people around, but laid in a manger. And that is where these wise guys are told, in the shadow of Herod, in the shadow of Herod's murderous regime, in the shadow of this tyrant of injustice, of horror upon horror, of war upon war, in the shadow of all of that, these magicians are told, go and worship the true king. And so that's where they show up, because that's where the star stopped. Now, what did the Magi bring and why? So here we have our wonderful, we can add some more frankincense, people. I know you were very sad. It doesn't still smell like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre up in here. There we go. All right, now I'm going to pass this around. Here's, you guys get myrrh first. It's very pretty. And you get that. And then later on, these two bowls are not warm. These are warmer. So just, but you can come and take a little bit to go, okay? They travel with gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And they are without a doubt the richest gifts that could be offered a newborn king. I know we're sitting there thinking, how about a baby Bjorn, some diapers, maybe some formula, right? Something more than just swaddling clothes. That would be great. Something different. But this was brought. Why do they bring it? Well, let's first talk about what it is. So the frankincense is tapped from trees that are growing in southern Arabia and limited areas of East Africa. So particularly, we have the frankincense here from Ethiopia, which I don't know if you know that the Ethiopian church is like the oldest church in the world. You can go to Ethiopia and see church buildings, and they have like the oldest Bible compiled in the world. I mean, it's incredible. Go, and you can go to the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. They'll have frankincense and myrrh, by the way. And you can go visit their services Sunday mornings in San Jose. Wonderful, beautiful frankincense that comes from Ethiopia. The myrrh comes from a wider area in southern Arabia and from Somalia. And both frankincense and myrrh are only harvested once a year. So you can't get this all year round. The production is labor intensive. The yield is small. But quantities of frankincense and myrrh that the Arabians and their Africans produced were huge. Like frankincense, myrrh is made from a gum resin. It's dried and compressed and then burnt to make this it doesn't smell good, right? Like this aromatic smoke. In addition to fragrant smoke, it's also used as a rich perfume. And myrrh is used to treat conditions ranging from battle wounds to skin inflammations to arthritis. There's all these, if you just go on like the essential oils website, you can find all the reasons why you should all be using frankincense and myrrh on a daily basis. And Jesus is also offered wine mingled with myrrh as painkiller at the crucifixion. You can read about frankincense and myrrh. If you just do like a BibleGateway.com and you pop in one of those two words, you can read about how it's described in the book of Song of Songs. When the woman wants to describe her beauty and her aromatic perfume that drives the men wild. And she'll be talking about frankincense more. You can go to the Torah, to Leviticus, and hear about how frankincense is being used in the tabernacle. Remember Zechariah at the beginning of the book of Luke. It's his time, chosen by lot, to go and burn incense according to the law of the Lord in the temple of the Lord. This is an Ethiopian icon with Mary and Joseph and a midwife and the baby and these three wise guys who come. And I like this because it's sourcing from the same community where these beautiful gifts are brought to Jesus. Why bring these gifts? They're expensive. They're fit for royalty, fit for a king. And I know there's a lot of fun symbolism. You can do frankincense for royalty and the priestly class. And myrrh can be used for burial. So it's like maybe foreshadowing to Christ's burial at the end. And gold is always for a king. But let's also read Isaiah 60. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, but the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations, Gentiles, people who are not Judeans, right, shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your son shall come from far away. Your daughter shall be carried in their nurse's arms. And then you shall see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you. The young camels of Midian and Ephah, those from Sheba, shall come. And they shall bring gold and frankincense and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. Isaiah 60 continues, for the coastlands shall wait for me, the ships of Tarshish first, to bring your children from far away, silver and gold with them, for the name of the Lord your God and for the Holy One, because he has glorified you. The descendants of those who oppressed you, those other empires to the east, shall come bending low to you. And all who despised you shall bow down at your feet, and they shall call you the city of the Lord, the Zion, the Holy One of Israel. So you guys, for Matthew's Jewish audience, who's no doubt familiar with Isaiah 60, the Magi then are the fulfillment of this prophecy. They're representing the nations, the Gentiles, that will come to worship the king. And just like good people who know their text, these Magi somehow know that they're going to bring the gold and the frankincense and the myrrh, even though they're not having access to Isaiah. They have access to the star. But here they come. So for Matthew's Jewish audience, they're like, I know why they brought frankincense. I know why they brought gold, right? There's a story being told here that Matthew wants us to understand. So the one born king of the Jews is here. How do people respond? Well, Herod is going to respond with what? Fear, rage, violence. Interestingly enough, the religious leaders, how do they respond? Tell me about their response here in the story. They know the prophecy, don't they? They know where the one who is going to be born king of the Jews will be born. They have it right there. They're like, oh, I got it. It's Micah. Let's go quote the verse. But we don't see them show up to worship the one born king of the Jews. And I just wonder how many of us religious leaders continue to miss Jesus these days. We know our text so well, but we're not willing to travel just a handful of miles to go and see. But these Magi, these Gentiles from the other nations, they'll travel hundreds of miles to come and to worship the king. And then we'll also take a peek at what Mary and Joseph do. So we have fear, denial, anger, murder, avoidance. We have at the arrival of Jesus worship, wisdom, a pursuit of peace, justice, hope, and faithful longing. And there's another story that's being told right here too. And we're going to listen to this song from Christopher Grundy called Take Us Home by Another Way. Having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their country by another road.
Spirit, take us home by another way. Take us long way round the tyrants and their schemes. Give us strength to walk, show us dreams of a better day, and we'll pave the way with justice going home by another way.
The mountains and the hills laid low, the rough places made plain. The despots thrown down from their thrones, till only love remains.
Spirit, take us home by another way. Take us long way round the tyrants and their schemes. Give us strength to walk, show us dreams of a better day, and we'll pave the way with justice going home by another way.
No offerings for billionaires to make them richer still. Bring all your frankincense and myrrh that the hungry may be filled.
Spirit, take us home by another way. Take us long way round the tyrants and their schemes. Give us strength to walk,
Show us dreams of a better day, and we'll pave the way with justice, going home by another way.
So when the Proud Boys and the Klan ask where the Christ child lies, just tell them that you'll let them know next time you're passing by.
Spirit, take us home by another way. Take us long way round the tyrants and their schemes. Give us strength to walk. Show us dreams of a better day, and we'll pave the way with justice, going home by another way.
So when things get tough and feet are tired, we'll know it'll be okay, 'cause we'll
pave the way with justice, going home by another way.
Sometimes you can't fight the tyrants, but you can go home another way. And you don't have to pave the way for them. You can pave the way for justice. And these magi show up and they go home by another way. And Mary and Joseph, being warned in a dream, they go and they escape with the child to Egypt. So that the words of Hosea 11 will be fulfilled, that out of Egypt I called my son. And they find safety there. This story that we find in the beginning of our beautiful Christmas season, how do we show up and how do we respond to the birth of the king, the one born king of the Jews? Do we bring our gold and frankincense and myrrh? You've got some at home, right? You're ready? You're ready to pull out the thing that's only harvested one time a year. I think the question that we get to learn from this as we smell this aroma in our space is that, will our life be that fragrant offering to Christ? Will we also bring our costliest treasures? Are we willing to sacrifice our very lives, our whole selves, our own way home, the way that we want justice to be found? Are we willing to sacrifice all of that to worship the king in the manger and to arrive at his banqueting table ready to dine with the king? I'm praying that we all now find ourselves on Epiphany Sunday ready to come with gladness and worship the one born King of the Jews in humble setting. Whether you find yourself on the in-group, on the inside, knowing all of the texts and the portions, that you know the fulfillment of every word of prophecy that Jesus has come to, or whether you find yourself far on the outside, like the magi that come from hundreds of miles away, ready to worship simply because the skies that are accessible to us all have given knowledge to his glory and his birth. Or whether you are like Mary and Joseph, sitting and cradling this newborn and wondering what God has gotten you into, and you find yourself trying to go home another way. Wherever you are in this world, in this season, I hope we remember that there's only one who is worthy of our worship, and that is Christ the Lord. And he's worthy of all of our most beautiful, aromatic, and costly gifts. And we get to worship him with gladness. We are going to turn to the time of communion now, and Junior and the team are going to lead us in an old hymn that is often sung on Epiphany Sundays. It's just a couple hundred years old. And so you may or may not be familiar with it, but I hope you listen to the words as we also prepare for communion. For in the night in which he was betrayed, our Lord Jesus took the bread, blessed, and broke it, giving it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body given for you, and do this in remembrance of me." And likewise, after supper, he took the cup, gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, "Drink this, all of you. This is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me." All are welcome at the king's table. Please come.